Try 4 weeks of The Spectator absolutely free. And, for this month only, you'll receive a Spectator wireless phone charger. Go to www.spectator.co.uk/charger.
Hello and welcome to a special Sunday edition of Coffee House Shots. We've just heard from the Prime Minister, where he laid out a roadmap to easing lockdown. Here's how he described the threat of coronavirus.
You've put up with all the hardships of that programme of social distancing because you understand that as things stand, and as the experience of every other country has shown, it's the only way to defeat the coronavirus, the most vicious threat this country has faced in my lifetime.
James, what do you make of the Prime Minister's words?
Well, this wasn't, in his words, a roadmap, but the first sketch of a roadmap. A conditional plan, he called it. And I think what you saw here was Boris Johnson trying to say to people, look, we're going to open up a tiny bit. It is the mildest possible easing of the lockdown. But what he wants to say to people is, look, if it looks like the R number, so e.g. the number of people that anyone with coronavirus is infecting, looks like it is going back above one, then we'll have to put the brakes on. And so I think what he is trying to say to people is, we're basically slightly going to suck it and see. So there's going to be a little bit of easing, see what happens. If that all goes okay, there'll be a little bit more easing. But this is a gradual plan. You know, it was just a few weeks ago that ministers were quite hopeful that they would be able to get schools back after half term. It's now a conditional plan to try and get 3 years of primary school back after half term. And so I think we see here that this R number is still doggedly high. 3 weeks ago, the cabinet were told it was between 0.5 and 1. Now Boris Johnson is saying it's been 0.5 and 0.9. So I think this is a very, very slowly approach. And I think that Boris Johnson, I mean, he is driving with one foot over the brake, kind of ready to perform an emergency stop if necessary.
Fraser, it may be a very slowly response in terms of slow changes, but one area where there has been a clear change is in terms of government slogan. First unveiled in the Sunday Telegraph, Stay Home has changed to Stay Alert. I think it's safe to say that it received quite a frosty reception this morning. Since then, Number 10 have tried to explain it, what exactly the slogan is getting at, and just now, we heard Boris Johnson talk the need for the country to stay alert going forward. Do you think that this messaging is going to work as government hopes it will?
I think the slogan's important in what it doesn't say rather than what it does. We have had for several weeks now a very effective slogan, which is stay at home, protect the NHS, save lives. The implication being if you leave your home, then you're putting lives in danger, your own life or more importantly, other people's lives. Now, it's difficult to row back from this and go into a new message saying please go to work, which the Prime Minister effectively was saying today. So how do you do this? And it's going to be pretty difficult to do it in a way which isn't a little bit embarrassing. That was always the concern. 3 or 4 weeks ago, you had cabinet members saying, look, this message is so emphatic. How are we ever going to soften it and come into a situation where we're encouraging people to reopen society, encouraging teachers to go and go back into schools? So this was never going to be an edifying process. And I think the slogan looks daft because it is a little bit daft. I mean, stay alert is something you might perhaps use for counter-terrorism, be on the lookout for suspicious things. You can't really be on the lookout for a virus. You can be careful, that's for sure. But to be alert, but there was never going to be a way out of this which wasn't a wee bit embarrassing. This won't be the last iteration of this slogan. And I think the government has started what it always knew was going to be a bit of an embarrassing journey.
Now, what the Prime Minister did present tonight were various different numbered of points plans about what we would be using to judge our success going forward, or perhaps lack of success. So we have among those the 5 tests, which Boris Johnson has previously laid out. James, starting with those 5 tests, did you get a sense from him tonight which of those tests he thought have been met so far and which haven't? PPE came up.
I think it was quite clear from what he said, although he did emphasise that it was a global problem, that he doesn't feel that the 4th test about having adequate supplies of PPE has been met. And I think that's particularly the case because as you open more things up, there will be more people who want PPE. For example, I think lots of teachers will want PPE if schools are going to reopen. There is a particular problem because the global demand for PPE has obviously skyrocketed because of this pandemic. And the UK has had, you know, some well-documented struggles around that flight from Turkey, which took days to arrive, and then a whole bunch of the gowns on board the plane didn't meet the requisite safety standards. The UK has had real difficulty sourcing PPE because it doesn't produce it domestically in any quantity. And I think it was clear that that was not being met. And it's obviously also clear that he, from how minimal the easing was, he doesn't feel that the fifth test has yet been met, which is that, you know, no second spike would overwhelm the NHS. So I think it is quite clear that at the moment, at the best you could say is that 3 out of 5 tests have been met. And in some ways you could perhaps say that the third test about the number of new infections isn't being met. Because although the number of new infections is in decline, there is a view that for the government's track, trace and test approach to work, you need the number of new infections to decline quite significantly from where they are now, because otherwise that whole system of contact tracing will be overwhelmed because it will just have simply too many people to deal with at first.
Now, we're also getting a new coronavirus alert system. This will consist of 5 stages dictated by the R number, so the rate of infection. Level 1 will mean coronavirus is not a threat. The suggestion being that would be when there is a vaccine or if there is a vaccine. And level 5 would mean the NHS is overwhelmed. Currently, we are thought to be number 4 with the hope of moving to number 3. On the R number, it's quite clear that this dictates everything the government is doing. Here's what Boris Johnson had to say about it this evening.
We must make sure that any measures we take do not force the reproduction rate of the disease, the R, back up over 1, so that we have the kind of exponential growth we were facing a few weeks ago. And to chart our progress and to avoid going back to square 1, we're establishing a new COVID alert system run by a new joint biosecurity centre. And that COVID alert level will be determined primarily by R and the number of coronavirus cases, and in turn, that COVID alert level will tell us how tough we have to be in our social distancing measures.
Fraser, the R number is ultimately what is driving the whole strategy here, isn't it?
Yes, and watching this on TV, I was struck to see the government's got this R-ometer, as it were, a speedometer with the R number, and it's placing huge amount of importance on data which is pretty patchy. We ought to remember, nobody knows what the R number is. It's not a known number. It can only ever be estimated because the number of actual infections can only be estimated. We know how many people have tested positive, but that depends on how many tests there are available. We know the number of people in hospital. That's the tip of the iceberg. The R number is supposed to measure the iceberg. And neither this country nor any other major country has found a way of doing that. This is what puzzles me about the whole process, because if you think that we're told that our lives, the economy, the society, education, everything depends on the precise measurement of this R number, and then you ask the government, so what is the R number? And they can't tell you. All they can say is within a range, somewhere between 0.6 and 1. And that is, in a way, it's sensible because it admits that you can't actually give a proper reading for this number. But then again, you ask, if they know it's so vague, if they know that there's no real way of knowing what it is, then why base your entire strategy around the precise reading of the R number? Why say to the country that if R is less than 1, then things are okay, but if it's R is 1.1, then things are bad and we can't go out of lockdown? If basically R could be 0.8 or it could be 1.2, and we just wouldn't know where it was in that spectrum because we can't narrow it down.
Now, sticking with that system for now, ultimately we will have the 5 stages, and then the idea is, depending on what stage the UK is deemed to be, on what the R number is estimated at, the UK and the public will be able to do different things. The lower the R number, the more spaceful manoeuvre. So, James, can you just run us through the three stages that the Prime Minister set out today? We're currently in stage one, and from Wednesday, under stage one, we are going to be able to do a few more things than we are currently allowed to do right now.
Yeah. Essentially, you'll be able to do unlimited exercise outside. You'll be able to play sports, remember, if you're in your own households. So, for example, you could play a game of tennis with your partner, but it's not much more than that. Then in phase two, they hope to gradually reopen schools. And then in phase three, in July, if the number is still where it is, they hope to begin a kind of gradual reopening of the hospitality sector, but maintaining social distancing. I think what that means is that you might be able to kind of sit outside at a cafe with the next table 2 metres away from you. I think that means that there is some hope for the hospitality sector, but I think this doesn't mean a return to packed bars and clubs. I mean, that is still a long way away.
But Fraser, this is only in England, isn't it? Even as of Wednesday, if you're in England, you can likely go to a garden centre, but it's not true north of the border, is it?
Yes, I'm afraid to say they're going to be exercising differently in Gretna Green than they are in Newcastle. I mean, this is... I watched this announcement on BBC Scotland, and soon as the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, as he described himself, left the airwaves, Nicola Sturgeon came on, saying that, no, everything you've just heard applies to England and only England. She sort of castigated the Prime Minister for not making that clear, saying there's a lot more room for clarity in what he's saying. She hasn't dropped the stay-at-home slogan. In fact, she actually spoke to the cameras with this massive big stay-at-home slogan behind her. She was saying that she is not advising anybody who's not working right now to go back to work. She's not going to be allowing people to drive to have a walk. She's not going to be talking about schools going back after the May half term as they are in England. None of these things are happening. Now, this, of course, is quite interesting. There's been some talk in the Scottish press about English cars being turned back at the border if you can drive to go for a walk in England, but you can't in Scotland. Now, I also noticed that when she was asked, well, why is this? Why is the situation so different in Scotland than in England? What is the R number? Is it higher? Now, she, just like Boris Johnson, places huge amounts of value in the Scottish R number, but she wasn't able to say what it was. All she was able to say was exactly the same thing you hear in England, that it's somewhere between like 0.6 and 1, but it might be a bit higher in Scotland than in England. Now, I think that's significant because the difference in policy between Scotland and England doesn't seem to be driven so far on a clear difference in the medical situation. Now, one of the other ridiculous things about the R number is that it varies up and down the country no matter where you are. Of course, Scotland is different from England, but Northumbria is different from London, is different from the West Country where you've got hardly any signs of a rabid infection. And so, of course, the countries are different, but it seems as if it is more than medical differences that are driving the different policy responses. So I think it's worth keeping quite a close eye on the Scottish situation there, because there will be policy differences, and it might not be long actually before Nicola Sturgeon starts being asked if she can explain why she's being so much more restrictive on Scots than Boris Johnson is on the people in England.
James, Fraser mentions some potential doubts with the current government strategy. Ultimately, in terms of the audience Boris Johnson had to appeal to tonight, all the polling repeatedly again this weekend suggests that the general public support the lockdown continuing in very large numbers. The Conservative Party and the Cabinet, however, is a different situation altogether. Ahead of today's meeting, there were reports that lots of Cabinet members had been left out of the decision-making process, with just the four Cabinet ministers who chair the coronavirus subcommittees really getting to be at the decision-making table. Is there unease about the build-up to today's address, and do you think what Boris Johnson actually said will have helped there?
I think the outer Cabinet have been restless and irritated for quite some time, and they have been becoming progressively more irritated. I think it has annoyed them. These people feel that they've achieved something quite significant by becoming members of the Cabinet, and they don't appreciate the fact that it appears that all the decisions have been taken before the cabinet meets. I think on Saturday there was quite a lot of grumbling going on because people were just cross that they felt that the decision of the meeting had been basically taken in advance of the meeting taking place. Now, you might say 'twas ever thus, but I think people are narked about this, and that I think is going to present Boris Johnson with a party management problem. I mean, though, there is something odd going on, which is because the cabinet isn't meeting physically and because Parliament is sitting in this kind of weird hybrid setting with not some, you know, a handful of MPs in the Palace of Westminster, but most zooming in, these problems of party management and of cabinet disquiet aren't having the normal grip and purchase that they would if we were not in this kind of era of social distancing. But I think that Boris Johnson is going to have to reassure his party. I think it is quite telling that he's going to address Tory MPs via kind of video link on Tuesday. I think that shows a realisation that he needs to explain to his own MPs what's going on, because, as you say, the polling suggests that the vast majority of the public are still supportive of the lockdown. It does seem that the people who are most worried about the lockdown, a disproportionately large number of them are to be found on his own benches.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Fraser. And we will hear more specifics in terms of Boris Johnson's plan and those three stages tomorrow when the Prime Minister faces his MPs in the House of Commons, be it virtually.
Thanks for listening to Coffee House Shots. I'm Kate Andrews, and I curate The Spectator's daily lunchtime coronavirus update. For the latest research, world news, and lockdown updates related to COVID-19, sign up for free at spectator.co.uk/COVID email.